The Orange FM.
Ready to form Voltron. Activate interlocks. Dinotherms connected. Impracel up. Mega thrusters are go.
Welcome, Voltron fans, and happy anniversary to Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. That's right, we have reached 1 year officially since we started the podcast. And I want to give everybody a chance to say happy anniversary. So a little bit later on, we're going to have the fans giving a happy anniversary message. And then at the same time, we're going to review all the episodes we did this past year. And I needed some help on this, so I thought, who would be better to give me some help on reviewing this whole year of Voltron? And I thought, Bob Koppler. All right, so I want to welcome Bob Koppler to the podcast for this anniversary show. Welcome, Bob.
Hey, Mark.
How you doing?
Good, good. Great to be here, and congratulations on a year of the Let's Voltron podcast. What a tremendous job you've done building this up and making something really special out of it. Really been enjoying listening to every episode you've done and being a part of it. So thanks for having me for this very special first anniversary best of episode.
Yeah, I really wanted to give something special back to the fans for this episode because, I mean, we've done so much in 1 year and it's unbelievable. This is actually the 35th episode. Can you believe we did 35 episodes in 1 year?
It's incredible. It's really incredible. And the people that you've been able to bring on the show, everyone from our original director, Franklin Kofod, to George Sohn with Toynami. So we've done the original production side. We've done merchandising side. You've really covered the bases and had some really really great people on the podcast who've been intimately involved with the franchise for a number of years. So it's really a treasure trove that you've built of history behind the brand. And it's really been great to listen to.
Well, thank you. I really just think that, you know, when Jeremy and I started this last year, it was, you know, Jeremy was still working for World Events Productions and, you know, we had that solid, you know, person there at WEP. And we, you know, we had, both of us had a pretty good knowledge of Voltron lore, you know, from all the series that we've watched over the years. And we just thought it would be a really good thing to give to the fans. And it was another way to communicate with the fans and give them some information as well. And there were times during the year that we actually did give out information. Of course, we promoted a lot of things, obviously, you know, a lot of things going on in the 30th anniversary year of Voltron. So, you know, now we've come to the point where we can look back on this and say, wow, what a year. And what were the highlights of this year? All right. So the first thing that I wanted to do, and we've done this in a lot of episodes where we've had guests on and we've asked people to send in their questions for those guests. And what we normally did was we asked our questions first and then had the fans' questions come second. Well, this time around, the fans are coming first.
Amen. Power to the people.
Yes. Yes. So in this episode, I had asked some people to, you know, post a voicemail and give us a call and leave a message and, you know, let us know what they thought, you know, maybe give a happy anniversary or thank you or whatever, however they wanted to do it. So I'm going to play those first, and the first person we're going to start with is Franklin Kofod.
Ahoy, Mark. It's Franklin Kofod. Happy first anniversary to the Let's Voltron podcast. Great meeting you and spending some time together at Comic-Con in San Diego this summer. I look forward to enjoying many more years of the Let's Voltron podcast. It's always a highlight of my day when a new episode shows up on my phone. I listen to them in the morning when I'm out hiking. Wishing you and the staff at Let's Voltron and Mark a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and I'll see you in San Diego next year. Now, let's get that Voltron movie made.
Hi, this is Greg Tyler, Dudley Drool Writes. Just wanted to wish you a happy 2014, Let's Voltron. I've greatly enjoyed listening to every one of the episodes, and I look forward to listening to many more. Thanks again. Happy holidays, happy new year, and let's Voltron.
Hi, this is Larry on Twitter, and I just wanted to wish you a happy one-year anniversary for the podcast. And my favorite ones are always the episodes where you go over the episodes of the show and give descriptions and explain what was going on and compare them to Go Lions. So I look forward to hearing more of those in the new year, and congratulations again. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, this is Chris.
Cubby.
Yeah, and Krista.
We're from Australia, and we'd like to wish you a happy anniversary.
Yay! Hi, I'm Susanna from New York. I just want to congratulate you guys for this amazing first year. I always said that I'm a better fan now, but only because of you guys. My favorite shows is every time you analyze the episode, anything that you have with a comic book writer. And the one with Mark Hamner was, that was for the ages. So keep it up. Happy holidays. And thank you so much for your hard work. And let's Voltron forever. Bye.
Hi, Let's Voltron Podcast. This is Tara from Sartron Force and the Twitter RP. Just wanted to say happy 30 years. And here's to 30 years more being strong and the favorite large robot of everyone. I just want to say it's been great. For the last 30 years, many childhood memories and many new memories from New York Comic Con and making a lot of long-lasting friendships. And once again, here's to our favorite big guy, and can't say anymore, but we love you and can't wait to see what's in the future for you. Have another great 30.
Yeah, this is Stanley Domer, aka Dream Sword, just calling in to tell you guys that I love the podcast, and that night where we all got together to watch Voltron was really fun, and I hope we can do something like that again sometime. So keep doing what you're doing, and good luck in the future.
All right, so that was the last one. I wanted to thank everybody who posted a voicemail message for us and, you know, greeted us with a happy anniversary. And what do you think, Bob? I mean, all these great people coming in and you know, giving us these great messages.
So nice, so awesome. It's really great to hear from everybody. And, you know, and with Franklin, what a nice message that was to you, Mark, and a testament to the great work you've done. And, you know, going back, I remember listening to his podcast and the stories that he told were just so cool to hear, you know, the original production and what a fast paced environment that they were under and the pressure that they were under to get these shows out was really interesting. To hear from him and to have his support of the franchise all these years is just so cool. And, you know, hope we can get that movie done, like he mentioned. And we'd certainly love to see it ourselves.
Well, as we go over this whole year of podcast episodes, the movie will be touched on a few times. You know, there's obviously a lot of people out there interested in a Voltron movie. There's a lot of people interested in a lot of the Voltron stuff that's been done already. So I want to thank everybody who gave us those happy anniversary messages. And hopefully we'll be doing this again next year for the second anniversary. So, Bob, why don't you say we start going through these episodes and start recalling everything that happened?
Yeah, totally. What we've got... about 70 hours to call through right now. Let's get started.
Yeah. All right. So here's the thing. In each of these episodes, we're gonna play a little clip, you know, that was a part of that episode. And we're just going to react to that. And we're also going to talk about, you know, what was just a basic summary of that episode. So we're going to start with episode 34, which was Voltron from Days of Long Ago. And this one had Tracy Todd, the senior editor of Viz Media, and Josh Bernard from Collection DX. And they were on the main part of the episode. And then we also had a pre-recording of Brian Smith and Jacob Shabbat from the Barnes & Noble book signing. So in this clip, Tracy talks about how the book was made for the fans and by the fans, and that it was the fans that have kept Voltron popular all these years.
Well, I have to say that I am so grateful to you both for your contributions to the book and to Jacob and Smitty as well. I really, you know, like I keep saying, I'm proud of the book, but I can hardly take credit for it because it really is what it is because of your contributions And also just, I think, the love that everyone involved had for Voltron. I mean, we really, really wanted to make sure that it felt like a fan tribute in a way too, or, right. You know, we didn't want to forget the fans, because obviously Voltron has been around for 30 years because of the fans. So I want to say thank you to all of your listeners too, especially those of you who wrote in and allowed us to include your memories on the end papers, which is a feature that was particularly important to me to include.
Okay, so there it is, Bob. What do you think?
Very cool. And what you said is so true about, you know, the fans keeping Voltron alive for 30 years. You know, it's totally the case. And we're very lucky to have a strong and devoted fan base that we do. And speaking of fan base, Tracy herself has been just such an important champion of Voltron at over at Viz Media. And she's the content that she has overseen over there has just been some of the best stuff that we've seen out of any partner. You know, she did the comic books based on Voltron Force, and then put together that 30th anniversary book, which was kind of the brainchild of hers along with Jeremy's. They both kind of came up with the idea together, and you know, Jacob and Smitty did such a great job, you know, with the mini comic at the end of that, and just coming, you know, drafting all of that language about, you know, going through every single episode and having, you know, I think there's like 10 or 12 pages on just Robies, which is incredible. They've cataloged every single, you know, enemy that Voltron's faced, and it's just a cool thing to have. And you know, we're lucky to have some devoted fans who worked on that that really put a lot of love and care into that. And you, Mark, you did such a tremendous job putting together, you know, the history of WEP and that, and for a lot of people, and me included, it was one of the most interesting parts of the book was reading about how the show all came together and being part of WEP. I'd heard many stories, of course, but you know, having all these different sources kind of tell a different story from their point of view, kind of help put together the complete picture. And I thought you did it probably, you know, more nicely than I had ever seen it done in the past, as far as cataloging that history. So,
all right.
So really nice job there by you and everyone who worked on that book.
Well, thank you.
I was actually just at Barnes & Noble today, and I was walking through the aisles and I saw that book sitting there on sale. I wanted to buy like 10 of them, but I've already got like 30 in my office.
Yeah, I really liked it. I really liked getting out there with the fans, and especially, you know, at New York Comic Con and at Barnes & Noble, and being able to, you know, like, you know, share that with them. And then, you know, doing book signings was something, of course, I hadn't done before.
Welcome to superstardom.
Yeah. So, you know, who knows, you know, maybe there's another book down the road that I can write as well.
I think it's in your future, Mark.
And then also at the same time, you know, it was nice having this podcast as an addendum to the book, to be able to take all the people that I interviewed that had been working on the show all those years, and, you know, to actually go back and ask some similar questions or different questions of them on the podcast and get a much broader, you know, breadth of content from them other than just the little snippets that we put into the book.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so going into our next episode, episode 33, this was Seth Green and Claire Grant, who had also made contributions to the book. So I'm going to play a clip for you here. In this clip, Seth talks from a high-level view about what it will take to make a Voltron feature film.
Listen, man, both of us are all about Voltron. When we were doing Titan Maximum, all we wanted to do was have a Voltron crossover. Anytime we talk about Team Unicorn cartoon, it's always about a Voltron crossover.
Yeah.
A Voltron feature is a difficult thing to do, just because summarizing the universe into a tight 90 minutes is going to be hard. And anything that's going to do justice to the agreed lore of Voltron is going to have to be made by someone who desperately loves it and also has enough authority within movie making to get it made at the price point it would need to look right. So it's a big puzzle. I know there's a couple different times that people have tried to work it out, but technology is finally in a place where I think the visuals, everybody agrees the visuals can be incredible.
You know, that was Seth talking about what it would take to make a feature film. And I'm sure, Bob, you've been there already a couple times when he was talking about that puzzle that they're trying to solve. And it's been tried a couple times.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think he hit the nail on the head. There's a number of challenges, but if done right, it could be truly exceptional. And did you ask him if he'd be in the movie? I'd love to have Seth play a part in the movie.
Well, I didn't ask him specifically, but many people have asked Claire, and Claire said, "Sure, I'd love to be in the movie." And
oh my God, she'd make an amazing Allura, wouldn't she?
Yes, and that's what she would like to be because that was her favorite.
Oh my God, every little boy across America would be, you know, falling in love with Princess Allura. She'd be tremendous. But yeah, Seth is totally right about that. And it was interesting what he said about, bringing across the entire universe of Voltron in 90 minutes. I think what's important is that we stick to what Voltron is, which, you know, it's based on another planet. It's based away from Earth. It's got a very rich origin story. You've got two warring, empires sort of. Well, one empire, the Drool Empire, against what really is, a civilization that's been, persecuted for a number of years, and that's kind of just being revived. And there is a lot to get across in 90 minutes. I think it's totally doable, though, and doable in a way that, if you look at what Star Wars did in the first movie, you have to start with a central character and have a hero that everybody can get behind. And, then you kind of start teasing out all of these other elements of the universe with, hints of, okay, there's more to this. The story goes deeper and deeper. And I think audiences are savvy enough that they realize that this is only the tip of the iceberg of the universe. And then, if you can just tell a great story, that's what needs to be done. It needs to be a great story about a central character in the first, 90 minute film. And then if you do it well enough, God willing, you'll have, a number of sequels to tease out the remainder of the story.
Right.
So, but he's right. Technology's there for sure. You can make a Voltron movie and just have it look absolutely spectacular without looking, hokey. I mean, I can only imagine, and I do imagine a lot of the time, what a CGI robot lion would look like in, photorealistic looking feature film. It'd be absolutely, breathtaking. So
right.
We'll see it. We'll see it someday soon. We're working on it.
Yeah. The funny thing is even during that podcast, we had gone down to the level of the colors and, is it a shiny color on metal or is it a magic metal or, we had even talked to that level, So yeah, they think the shiny colors could work.
Well, it's really going to take a visionary filmmaker who wants to, who believes in the brand and grew up with Voltron and loves Voltron and wants to put their own unique stamp on it. I mean, it's going to be a very visual kind of storytelling. And so it's going to take that director that has that unique vision wants to take it in bold new places. And, because it's going to look like, it has to look like something that audiences haven't seen before, which in today's world where you've had Transformers and Pacific Rim, it seems like we've seen just about everything, but that's the challenge. How do we raise the bar? How do we show audiences something that they haven't seen before?
Right.
But that's the goal.
Okay. Well, that's something everybody's looking forward to.
Me included.
So, the next episode, episode 32, we were calling it the Voltron Fans Roundtable, and we had three special guests. We had Linda Endinger, Todd Matthey, and Tara Scully. Linda and Tara had been holdouts from the Voltron Fangirls episode when I could only bring four people on at one time for that one. So I brought Linda and Tara back for this because they wanted to be on the Fangirls episode. And then I brought in Todd because Todd had been involved with a part of Voltron that a lot of people haven't heard about yet. And that had to do with the Media Blasters DVD creation. You know, when Media Blasters went out and remastered everything from scratch from the original Go Line and Die Rugger and you know, did it frame by frame, just like it had been done on the show. Yeah, so Todd was an intern that had worked a summer on working on that. And, you know, we had talked in at length about a lot of things, but in this clip, Tara first and then Linda and Todd chime in about what they would like to see for adults in a Voltron series.
I would like to see them get a little more, I mean, whether it was in some kind of a animation or even in a real life series, you know, cast, you know, real live action, go a little more adult with it. Give the adult fans a little something more, you know, not necessarily like HBO level, but, you know, a little darker, a little more adult.
Something they could see on Adult Swim rather than on Saturday morning cartoons.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, the little kiddies got their cotton candy version. You know, give the older fans something.
More of an anime than a cartoon.
There you go.
Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. I think with me, definitely more anime. I actually kind of feel like at times we're running away from anime with Voltron.
Yeah. Kind of like the way the comic books were going.
All right, so there you have it. We were talking about, you know, having something that was strictly for adults in a Voltron series, you know, sort of like the way they've done with like Gotham and Arrow and Flash and all those for DC. You know, that's sort of the way they're going if you're talking live action. And then if you're talking animation, you know, in an adult style that you might see on Adult Swim. What do you think about that, Bob?
I mean, there's a couple things there. So, you know, if you want the adult style Voltron, go watch Go Lion. It's fantastic. And it's like, it's as violent as you could possibly imagine. You know, as far as new content that's adult focused, I think there's ways of putting stuff in there that maybe is on a complexity level that only adults will really understand. And I think that's what we tried to do in the past and what we'll continue to do, you know, as far as just depth of story, because I think you can make a kid's show that's also appealing to adults. And there's a number of series out there that I think do that really well. You know, in terms of, you know, because if we're going to do 26 episodes or 52 episodes, it does need to appeal to kids as well, because that's going to be the core audience. And, you know, that's where it would likely air is on a kids network. So because just in the United States, it's just a reality. The majority of the animated marketplace is for kids. It's not true in every country. You know, in Japan, cartoons are consumed just as much by adults as kids. But, you know, here it's, you know, most of the animation consuming public are kids. So we have to satisfy them. Is there a possibility of doing like a, you know, real adult, like violent version of Voltron where it's like, you know, not for kids? I could see that potentially in like a 90 minute OVA, like a direct to video kind of animated movie.
Right.
I think that would be really cool. I would love to do something like that. That'd be a ton of fun. But they, you know, they also mentioned, you know, you gave the cotton candy version, which I assume they're talking about Voltron Force. Can we go back anime? Great thought. And, you know, I can't give away anything about future content, but let me just say this, that we've thought about that a whole lot. And I think the person who made that comment is going to really enjoy the new content that we come out with.
Oh, that's great. Because, that's great to hear.
Yeah. You know, it's source material is edgy, you know? I mean, so, and I think, you know, kids kind of picked up on that, even though, you know, we cut out all the violence. It just seemed kind of like this edgier, older brother version of, you know, He-Man or Transformers. It was just, there was that, just that kind of edge to it. And, you know, I think we can keep that and still make it PG.
Right. Right. I agree. All right, so going to the next one, we've got episode 31, which was Voltron comic book artists N. Stephen Harris and Jacob Shabbat. In this clip, Jacob recalls why he liked Lion Force Voltron better than Vehicle Team, and N. Stephen Harris chimes in as well.
I was more of a Lion Force fan. They showed it in chunks, so like they'd show a bunch of Lion Force episodes, and then they'd show a bunch of Vehicle Force episodes. Mm-hmm. I remember being a little bored of during the vehicle stuff. I thought Vehicle Voltron looked really cool. I mean, he had real hands; they weren't lion heads. He had this cool helmet, roller skate feet,
and his face wasn't in a lion's head.
Right, yeah. So I thought the robot looked really cool, and I liked all that stuff. And I liked when he was fighting Robeast, but they were just too. I think for me as a 6-year old, there were too many characters to keep track of. So I really only remember like the main guy. I remember Ginger, who flew the red little red plane. I remember Pidge's brother because I was a huge Pidge fan.
Oh,
as a
wow.
kid.
Yeah,
I don't remember any of the characters.
I just remember these few, and then I remember the C team were all like mermen. They all had blue skin, I think. I barely.
Yeah, so I mean, basically, what you're talking about is two artists here who are mentioning that they thought, you know, vehicle team Voltron looked really cool, and you know he had a lot of things that for artists they would love, but they, as far as the show goes, they had a hard time, you know, keeping up with 15 characters.
Yeah, it's you know, between the two series, I love them both, obviously, but for kids, you know, there's a simpler storyline behind Lion Force. It's easier to understand everything that's going on. Vehicle Force is very complex. It's not just the number of characters. It's the interactions. You have a villain who's not necessarily evil. They're out to save their own existence. And you have warring factions within the enemy itself. Like you have... you have a general on the front lines who wants to make peace. And then you have, you know, the emperor of the Drool forces who's, you know, giving conflicting orders. And there's dissension among the ranks, among the Drool in Vehicle Voltron. And it's kind of unclear who the enemy is because there's enemies within the enemies. And, you know, the Die Rugger force or the Vehicle Voltron force, it's actually an exploratory force. They're not meant for war. The Die Rugger / Vehicle Voltron robot is all about exploration and gathering data and exploring new planets. And it has, oh, by the way, this ability to combine into a mega robot and fight battles against these massive machines, which is, you know, always makes for a really cool ending. But, you know, you have sort of a complex overlay that, you know, going back as an adult, it's really cool to watch that series. But, you know, I think as a kid, there's a lot of talking. There's really a lot of talking. I mean, in the talking versus the action in Vehicle Voltron versus Line Voltron, I mean, you just see way more talking in the Vehicle series. And, you know, for kids, they want to see more action, obviously. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I think by its nature is geared toward an older audience.
Right. And when I was watching Voltron back in 84, I was 15 years old, so I could definitely handle all these, you know, different complex situations and everything. But I also think, you know, just the coolness of Vehicle Voltron when he was fighting, you know, the other machines or Robeasts or whatever you want to call them. So I think, you know, from an artist standpoint, they would love to do just as much Vehicle Voltron as Lion Force Voltron just because of how cool he looked.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It is a really cool looking robot. And I'd love to have a freshened up Vehicle Voltron on my shelf next to my Lion Voltron.
All right, let's move on. Episode 30. We had Prince Lotor crushes on Princess Allura. And this was one of our episodes where we had actually done reviews of the original Voltron Defender of the Universe episodes. So this time around, I had Dan Jolly with me. And in this clip, Dan and I talk about a rare internal fight for the Voltron Force after Princess Allura took Black Lion to practice without letting the team know. Well, meanwhile, in the castle, all five Ultron Force members walking down the hall in front of Princess Allura. And she says, "Please don't be angry, forgive me." And the others are ignoring her. At this point, Karan lectures, "The Voltron Force is a team. Like a chain, it is only as strong as its weakest link." Pidge says it was all the princess's fault. Karan says Princess earned the place to fly Blue Lion, but he's not sure she deserves that privilege now.
Yeah, that scene in particular, the Voltron team is a good bit harsher, because it's not so much that they're talking about whether she has the right to pilot the Blue Lion or not. It's more about, Shirogane wouldn't have done that. Shirogane wouldn't have got himself in that situation. And Allura, or Fala, says, "Oh, I understand. I'm not ever going to be as good as Shirogane." And she leaves. But then you get a little bit of Kogane, Keith's internal thoughts. And he actually says to himself, "No, Princess, I want you to be as good as Shirogane. I want you to be better than he ever was." And that's a good bit more supportive than the Voltron team is toward her.
Yeah, there. Yeah. I mean, she doesn't like what Karan said.
"Privilege? Do you call it a privilege to defend one's world from evil?"
"But you had no right to take the Black Lion."
"I just wanted to help."
"You could help a lot more if you would do just what you're supposed to. We don't need surprises."
"We get enough surprises from Zarkon and Lotor."
"Your friends are angry, and they have the right. Princess, you must realize the Black Lion is only for the commander of the Voltron Force."
"Keith, I only wanted to learn in case someday you returned to Earth and I was left on my own. Keith, say something."
"Good intentions or not, you almost cost us our lives. Sven never would have done that."
"So that's it. You think I'm not as good as Sven. I've failed."
We're talking about the episode where Allura took Black Lion without telling the others, just because she wanted to see if she could fly it. And, you know, this is one of those rare times in those Voltron episodes where there was fighting within the team.
Yeah, it's a really cool scene and a seminal moment in the series where you see Allura go from this dainty princess that needs protection to someone who wants to step up and be a warrior to help save her planet. And it is really interesting to see how the team reacts and, you know, Keith's reaction, because she does go out and take his lion. And, you know, is he, as a leader, it's interesting to see, you know, what he does about it, because, you know, is that a threat to him? Is he going to take is she going to take his pilot seat away? And you know, I think at first he gets pissed and, you know, the whole team becomes angry with her. But in the end, Keith is the one that comes to her defense and pushes her to actually become better. And, you know, I think that's the mark of a true leader, is he wants to be surrounded by capable people. And even if, you know, at the risk of them surpassing him in skill level. And that's really, I think for Keith, the be all end all is he wants to see people step up and actually be able to take his place. So, you know, you see him, I think at first he feels a little bit threatened, but then he softens and realizes that it's very noble what Allura is doing. And, you know, just, you know, you see a lot of female warriors in this day and age, but I think back then that was kind of something interesting and forward thinking, is you have a female lead who really goes and takes a lead role in a combat position. And what's interesting is all the guys on the team are really supportive and encouraging of her, even though they don't give her any breaks. Like, you have that scene where Red Lion is firing at her and, you know, he hits her with a dead on shot. Lance does, you know, they don't go easy on her. In the Japanese series, it's even more so. They push it even more, you know. They're actually, like, when they go into combat, they're like, "Stop being such a wimp, Allura." Like, they'll start like taunting her, right? Almost. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool scene. What are your thoughts?
Well, I just think that, you know, when the end of the episode comes along and she finds out that nobody wants her, you know, not on the team. They definitely want her on the team. They just want her to be, you know, as good as Sven or even better. And they know she can be. And it's never a matter of we don't want you on the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. I'm going to move down to episode 29. We were doing a RetroCon recap and a New York Comic Con preview. And I had Mark Oliver on with me. And one of the people that we had interviewed at RetroCon, his name was Josh McKillips. And in this clip, one of the RetroCon attendees, Josh McKillips, talks about what he'd like to get as a Voltron toy. If there was something else that you wanted as a Voltron consumer, what would you want to have?
To be honest, the one character that I would love to have in any way, shape, or form at this point is Coran.
Oh.
He was a central part of the team.
Yeah.
But you never got a figure, as far as okay. I can remember. And I don't know why, but like you said before, you touched on earlier, there are a lot of side characters in the show you could produce, you could make, mm-hmm. and there you go.
Coran?
I want Coran. I really do. I know that might sound strange, but Coran and the mice.
Right.
Because that was one thing, too, with those 3 3/4-inch figures. It was like, well, if they would have just thrown in a little, it could have been just a little, you know, 3 or 4 of them, boom, right there.
Yeah.
To go with Paige or Laura, but we didn't get that. And it was kind of like, you know, hey, you could throw out whatever you throw out at this point for me, for Voltron, I'm probably going to be there.
Yeah, so he was pretty encouraging, you know, just to be able to be one of the people that's out there actually buying the toys, collecting the toys. And he had the original Matty collector. And he also was interested in Coran and the mice. Isn't that interesting?
Coran and the mice. I love that. I don't know if there was ever a Coran. I think there might have been a small Coran done by Panos Place, maybe. But you'd have to put a voice in there, you know, like a button you press, like the keys to the lions, you know, have them say a few phrases. But yeah, that'd be cool. I'd love to do a Coran figure and you had the mice for sure.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, basically he also said that anything you make right now, he's pretty much going to get.
Well, it's good to know we have at least one unit sold already. So that'll help.
Yeah. So And looking back at that episode, we were doing a RetroCon recap and an NYCC preview with Mark Oliver. And also, Mark Oliver was a judge on that We Love Fine contest. So he had given some of us the perspective on what it was like to be a judge for those T-shirt designs. Okay, so let's go to episode 28. And this was the 30th anniversary show with World Events Productions' Tiffany Ilardi. So, Bob.
Yeah.
it was great to have Tiffany on the show, and it was great for her to kick off the 30th anniversary with us. And later that day, we also had an opportunity to get together with fans on Google Hangout and actually do a Voltron marathon. So that was really cool as well.
Yeah, that was awesome. And Tiff did such a good job on the podcast. She sometimes can be shy about getting out there and doing press, but it was really good to hear her kind of come out of her shell and really talk about her Voltron love. I thought she did a tremendous job. Really, really enjoyed listening to that one.
Well, in this clip, Tiffany, answering a fan's question, tells us she would be first in line for a complete Voltron Blu-ray collection. Cubbyberry in Australia has said that Australia has no access to Netflix or Hulu. Fans would like to know if there would be a Blu-ray box set edition of all the Voltron versions.
Wow. Well, I would love that too. And I don't know of it, any plans for it yet, but there has been a release, there has been talk of a full release of the entire Voltron collection. So that would include the original, the 3D, and the Voltron Force episodes. But as of now, I haven't heard anything about a Blu-ray box set, but I'm first in line if there is one, because I think it's a product that we really need out there. And I know it's something fans really want.
Right. And I remember Robotech had done a similar thing with all their DVDs and
right.
had released the whole collection and fans went crazy for that. So I think Voltron fans deserve that too. So that would be really cool.
I agree.
I think she would be second in line. I think I'd be first in line. Yeah, the two of us would be fighting over it. I agree. It'd be awesome.
Are we any closer to getting, you know, a full collection like that?
No plans as of today to get a DVD out there. We're still pushing for it. You know, with DVDs, there's a lot of pricing pressure put on it. And, you know, the DVDs that are really selling well now are those discounted ones at Walmart. So if we want to do like a really cool Voltron 30th anniversary pack, it would be at a pretty high price point. So it wouldn't be like that Walmart DVD, but it'd be, you know, for collectors. And I think it could succeed with that audience. But, you know, we'd want to do it upright and be kind of, you know, maybe package it with a little collectible item.
Oh, that would definitely work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's another thing that we're pushing to get done, you know, before the age of DVDs is gone.
Right.
You know, who knows? Who knows how long DVDs will even last these days? But that would be a really cool keepsake. And, you know, I'd certainly be out there, be the first to buy it.
Okay, going down to episodes 26 and 27, because this was a two-part episode, all talking about Vehicle Team Voltron, and I had as my special guest Gregory Tyler, who's a very big aficionado on Voltron. And Greg Tyler, in this clip, he talks about some of the Vehicle Team pilots.
Yeah, okay. Like, why don't we talk about Marvin and Hutch together?
Okay.
Marvin and Hutch, and I haven't been touching on which ships these various characters fly. I actually do know all of that information. It's right off the top of my head, and I can recite that stuff verbatim. It's mm-hmm. kind of scary.
Yeah.
But Marvin and Hutch actually fly the vehicles that form Voltron's feet, mm-hmm. The infamous cars. Marvin and Hutch are buddies. They're kind of I don't know if you could call them a Laurel and Hardy or an Abbott and Costello, but they're both they're very good buddies. They clown around a bit. They brawl.
They play poker together.
Yes, play poker together. There's an episode where they're late in bringing their laundry to the ship's laundry facility, and they each have an enormous pile that they sort of foist onto the poor lady who's behind the counter. And they're just kind of I don't want to cheapen them by calling them comic relief, but they're definitely lighter characters in the cast.
I always want to call them Starsky and Hutch, because Starsky was always the more comedic of the two. All right, so there you go. We talked about a lot of things in those two episodes, and obviously we focused on the pilots themselves first. There were 15 pilots across three different teams. And then we went into a lot about the drools and all the different drool commanders and everything. So we touched all of those, and then we touched on, you know, a bunch of other things. And in the second part of the episode, we touched in the Voltron, the Vehicle Voltron toys and collectibles. So everything that came out that was made with Vehicle Voltron. And I think one of those was a 3D puzzle that was a favorite of Greg's. So what do you think about that one?
That's awesome. I mean, yeah. Marvin and Hutch, too, pulling those out. Those guys were, they kind of were kind of the comic relief. I feel like they were sort of the hunk of Vehicle Voltron. And yeah, they were always kind of had their antics going on. Love those two characters. Yeah, it's impressive whenever you can meet somebody who can name every single pilot and what they the vehicle that they pilot. In Vehicle Voltron, you know, there's 15 of them, and you know, if you can name the air, sea, or land team and what they pilot, you know, that's give yourself a pat on the back. That's a good trivia right there.
Yeah, and I remember when we posted those episodes that we put on it, there was a diagram that had that. It had each of the air, land, and sea teams, and each of the pilots that were in each and each you know, segment of Voltron that they piloted.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. All right. Then we're going down to episode 25. And this was a big one because it was one of the original series people. This was original series voice actor Neil Ross. And in this clip, Neil Ross greets the show as Keith with the commands for assembling Voltron. I also did a second clip where Neil tells how wonderful it is that the fans remember the people that made Voltron a part of their career.
And all I can say at this point is, let's form Voltron. Activate interlocks. Dinotherms connected. Infracells up. Mega thrusters are go. Let's go, Voltron Force. Form feet and legs. Form arms and torso. And I'll form the Tachus. Oh, wait a minute. I think I got one of those lines wrong.
Yeah, that's okay.
Figure out which one it was.
I think everybody else knows.
Here I have, in Voltron, in Transformers, in G.I. Joe, something that people remember and care about and are interested in after all these years. And people are willing to fly us to conventions so they can meet us and talk to us and ask questions about the shows. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful gift. And I think I speak for everybody in the show, at least all the folks that I've had a chance to talk to. We're very grateful that these shows are remembered. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to have happened to us.
What do you think about Neil?
Neil is a super talented guy, and it's so cool hearing him go back and do the Keith voice, which he can still nail. You know, just a true, true professional. That guy's a legend in the audio booth. You know, he just made up characters on the spot. And I love how he talked about with Pidge. He just kind of, I think, was joking, and he just said something like, "How about I talk like this?" And they're like, "That's it. You nailed it." You know, he had to take that crazy voice and use it throughout the whole series. But, super talented guy. So lucky to have him, have had him work on the original show. Will forever be, immortalized in the annals of Voltron history as the lead, you know, the voice of Keith. So, really talented guy. Among an incredibly talented cast. Every member of that cast really went on to do a lot of different things. So, it was really cool to hear Neil on the podcast reprising his role as Keith.
Yeah, it's wonderful that all of those original six that they had gotten to do both shows, you know, the Vehicle Team show and the Lion Force show. It was just amazing that they were such a wealth of talent right from the start, and that whoever they had, I know Franklin and Peter Keefe and a bunch of those guys were the ones that had, you know, selected those out of like a group of like 30. And they picked these six, and they just nailed it every time.
They really did. I mean, yeah, kudos to Peter and Franklin for assembling the cast they did. They just did a tremendous job casting that show. And, you know, and the, what they had to get out of those six voice actors. I mean, there were so many episodes where you'd see like a kid or, you know, a female. And, you know, you could just hear like either Neil or and one of the other guys just giving the female voice, that it's so clearly a man, but they're stretching to be like, "Shave me, Voltron."
Right. Or the Handmaidens of Allura, where they had to do giggling princesses in the background kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, Neil was great. And I feel lucky that I've been able to interview him for the podcast, and then I was also able to interview him for RetroCon the year before that.
That's right, yeah.
So, all right, let's go down to episode 24. This was acid-free gallery owner Chris Wofford, and we were talking about some of those limited edition prints that were being offered at the time. There was James White, and then Vincent Asala was also one of the ones that was coming up for the 30th anniversary. So in this clip, Chris Wofford talks about the excitement that Voltron brings for the artists of Acid Free Gallery and the dream he has for Voltron. And this is going to be immediately followed by a rare breaking news announcement. It's exciting to see this new Voltron art every time it comes out. to see these artists, and they're as big of fans of Voltron as we are.
I tell you what, Mark, there's excitement about Voltron. Every time we approach an artist or an artist approaches us, they love Voltron. It should be a household word. It should be out there on everyone's television. And I'm hoping DreamWorks can bring us the Voltron.
The Voltron movie, the Voltron TV show, the Voltron everything, right?
Everything.
Yes.
Especially yes. Live action movie.
Yes. Yes.
That's my dream.
All right. Well, only DreamWorks can make that happen right now.
Right. That's another podcast.
Right. That's another podcast.
World Events Productions presents Voltron from days of long ago.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have breaking news on Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. We have just learned that the 30th anniversary book by Viz Media, Voltron from Days of Long Ago, is now available for pre-order on store.voltron.com. We heard from Chris. His dream is for a Voltron live-action movie as well as all this other stuff.
Mine too. I love it. I hope if DreamWorks is listening. Chris is right on. You know, I'm with him. I want to see all that. We're working toward all that. And you know, just another note about Acid Free. I know I keep saying this about some of our different licensees, but they just do such a tremendous job. Those posters that they've come out with are so cool.
Yeah, and his passion for the brand is just amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And the artist that they had work on that, his name is escaping me.
The original one, Tom Whalen?
Yeah, Tom Whalen. His work was just tremendous. And everything's just a unique take on things. And it's kind of retro, but just, you know, well composed and just beautifully well brought together. But it does Voltron in a way that you've never seen it before. And just really loved getting every single poster from them because every single one was just, a fresh take on things and a cool composition. And hope to work with those guys for a long time. They do cool stuff with everyone. You know, some of their Transformers stuff is amazing. And you can tell with Acid Free, they put a lot of love and care into everything they do, not just Voltron, but they're just a really great company.
Right. And with James White and Dave Perillo and Tom Whalen, I tried to get those guys on the podcast once, and it's just hard to manage the schedules and everything at the same time. So we're still going to try to get those guys. We want to see some of these print artists on the podcast.
Yeah. I want Tom Whalen to do my, my Christmas cards next year. I love that guy. All of them did such a great job. Yeah. So yeah, we got to get them on the podcast.
All right. So the next episode, 23, it was Voltron at San Diego Comic-Con. My wife, Kim, and I had gone to San Diego Comic-Con, and we were able to get an interview with Claire Grant of Team Unicorn. And at the same time, Rylea Vanderbilt, also of Team Unicorn, sort of podcrashed us. And then also we did an interview with George Son of Toynami while we were there. So in this clip, we'll hear Claire and Rylea of Team Unicorn talking about what it means to come together like Voltron, especially for Team Unicorn.
Well, I mean, I think what it is, it's this feeling that, yes, you can accomplish a lot by yourself, but when you have people that are like-minded and love the same things as you, you can actually create something even larger and more amazing. And that's kind of, for me, that's what the idea of Voltron is, and coming together like Voltron. Team Unicorn, that's, you know, it's a thing. We know we're stronger together than we are apart.
Yeah, and, you know, with Voltron, they all pilot these individual robots, and that's super awesome. Mm-hmm. But when they come together, they have to, like, be totally in sync to form this robot.
Right.
And they have to be, like, the perfect definition of a team, because they're not just, at that point, individual parts going in and, like, taking down the big bad. They have physically come together to take down the big bad. And
right.
that is a true team right there. That's like the definition of teamwork. And
right.
That's what Team Unicorn tries to be about.
So there you have the true definition of teamwork is Voltron.
I tell you, man, thank God for Team Unicorn. They're wonderful, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
I mean, they can articulate the message of our brand of Voltron, you know, better than anyone. You know, the fan love and support from them has just been so phenomenal. And they aren't they're easy on the eyes. They're not hard to look at, are they?
No, they're certainly not. And they've helped you out at a few events. They were at a couple of the Comic-Con panels, and they were also at the THQ kickoff event.
They were indeed. And, you know, Claire helped us with the panel this year in New York Comic-Con, and I thought she did a great job spicing it up a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah, she was really good on the 30th anniversary panel this year. And, been really improving and contributing to a number of panels over the years. And we hope to have them in future panels as well. Team Unicorn is always welcome to be part of our Voltron, you know, Comic-Cons.
Right, and we wish them success with their new show, Team Unicorn Saturday Action Fun Hour.
Yeah, watch it. It's going to be awesome.
All right, so we moved on to the next one. This is another episode. This is episode 22 called Defender of the Universe, and Dan Jolly was there with me again for the episode reviews, you know. And in this clip, Dan remarks about how his perspective has changed since watching these episodes as a kid.
And whenever any world across the vastness of space is threatened with injustice or cruelty, good people everywhere can rest assured there is one who will always be ready to help. Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
So we've come to the end of the four episodes now. What did you think of that episode review?
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Okay.
Even though I've been a grumpy, picky old man.
Well, I got to tell you, there is a difference between watching these as a kid and watching them as an adult, obviously. You know, we wouldn't have picked it apart as much as this when we were kids.
Well, there's watching it as a kid, there's watching it as an adult, and then there's watching it as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's watching it as a writer who's actually worked within this universe.
Right.
You know, because I'm watching it, I'm analyzing it, I'm like studying it, you know. So, yeah, it's a very different experience.
Which is why I thought it would be cool to have you on here to go over these reviews, because you've got a very unique perspective compared to me, that's for sure. Yeah, so Dan Jolly, he worked on the Devil's Due Publishing comics, and, you know, he has a definite unique perspective to these episode reviews that we do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, anytime you've, you know, touched it, been a part of it, contributed to the universe, you must have a really unique way of looking at, you know, where the story goes from there. And Dan's one of the great writers who has, you know, put his input on our universe. And, you know, we've gone in a number of directions with the story. We've tried to make sure everything is consistent or relatively consistent among, you know, the comic and the shows. And they went a unique direction with Devil's Due and did a really great job. But, you know, all of the writers that we've had for the comics have been really good about watching all of the episodes and having a real understanding of the entire universe of Voltron, so that everything they do kind of augments what we've already built. And so when you look at, you know, all the comics and all the shows, you know, it just keeps building upon itself. And we have a really rich universe that has accrued over a number of years. So, and Dan has really been a great contributor to that.
Okay, so I also wanted to mention that the fact that we had originally interviewed Dan in one of the episodes we're going to be getting to, you know, for his work on Devil's Due Publishing Comics. But then I had asked him later on if he wanted to join me on doing one of these episode reviews, and he said yes. And he was happy to do that. And I thought that that was great because, you know, of his unique perspective and how, you know, he knows everything about this because he had worked on it.
Yeah.
All right. So going down, we're going to talk to another comic book writer. In episode 21, we had Dynamite Voltron comics writer Brandon Thomas. So in this clip, near the end of the interview, Brandon reveals why Sven had a larger role and the sacrifice that Keith had made if this story had continued.
He was always going to come back. He was always going to have a big role. And, you know, I guess I'll go ahead and tell people at the end of my run, Keith was not going to be leading the team anymore.
Okay.
Sven was going to be back in the commander's chair.
Oh, wow.
At the very end.
Boy, that's something a lot of the Sven fans would have loved to have seen.
Yeah, yeah. So, Keith, at the end of the day, you know, the secrets demand a price. And keeping those secrets was going to kind of alienate him a little bit from his friends, at least for a little while.
Okay.
So, you know, it's kind of one of those things. At the end of the day, he is one of the big reasons that, you know, the third sphere is ultimately defeated and that Doom and Eris and Earth get to embrace a new relationship of, I don't want to say mutual cooperation, but maybe begrudging respect.
Okay.
But in the process, Keith was going to lose a lot of the things that that meant a lot to him.
Understood. That's pretty cool.
Those are some of the broad strokes of how the story was ultimately going to play out.
Well, there you go, fans. That's the big reveal here on the Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast from Brandon Thomas.
Yep. So you keep me talking long enough and I'll just tell you everything. That's the trick. Like, if you want to know something from me, just keep talking to him for long enough, and eventually he won't be able to hold it in anymore, and he'll just give it all away. So that was going to be the end.
So this was just one long interrogation, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Keith was going to save everything and also lose everything.
All right, so Brandon Thomas revealing a lot more than we thought we were going to get out of him about what would have happened in his comic series had it continued on.
Kudos, Mark, on getting him to spill the beans about that. It's funny because I was just about to say what before he said it, like, with Brandon, just let him talk. Just have him keep talking because you know he wants to spill the beans, and that's what he did, and that would have been really cool to see. And who's to say we won't see that at some point down the road? Of course, now you'll probably have a pretty good idea what a new Brandon Thomas comic book series, the way it's going to end.
Right.
But, yeah, that's a really cool take on it. And you know, Brandon, really cool writer. He did some unique things with Voltron. Really enjoyed his stories. And, yeah, with Sven kind of overtaking Keith would have been a fascinating ending. And you know, it really would have worked, I thought. So maybe we'll see that at some point. Who knows?
Maybe. Brandon had the distinction this year of having the longest podcast episode. His was an hour and 55 minutes long.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
And after talking to him that long, that's when he was able to reveal all that information.
Yeah, probably at the very end there. He's just probably bottling it up and then just whoosh, came out.
Yeah, that was awesome. Episode 20 was the Voltron Fangirls Roundtable. And we had four people on. We had Casey Snyder, Chi Toy, Tally LaFlamme, and Moira. And in this clip, the Voltron fangirls show their support for her universe and what they'd want to be able to get with Voltron on it.
Let my fan flag fly, you know, and just enjoy it.
Are you guys okay with calling yourself fangirls?
I am.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I rock the title.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I own it.
And are you guys familiar with her universe?
Yes, cute stuff.
Would you like to see Ashley Eckstein's Her Universe get the Voltron license?
Yes.
Would that not be cool?
Oh, gosh. I would love to have tights that have, like, maybe Robeast all over them. And that would be kind of cute right there. And then,
I love tights.
Or imagine tights that have nothing but Gary on them.
Oh, my God.
I love those.
That would be something.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. Hilarious, especially just many expressions of Gary all over them. And then have a nice big old top that would just have, like, Voltron classic style pose.
And we have to have Keith's jacket.
Oh, yes.
Oh, the biker jacket? Oh, my gosh, yes. I would love it.
So what do you think about that, Bob?
I'd love to see it. We, you know, love our Voltron female fans, including you know, all those girls in the round table. They're all terrific, and they've just been huge supporters of the show, and you know, they're really part of that core fan group. And it, because our, you know, our core fans are, I'd probably 50-50 male female. There's they really are plenty of female Voltron fans. So we need to get them what they need. We need to get them some licensed merchandise. I completely agree. We just have to convince our partners that they're out there. You know, I'm going to send that podcast episode to, we'll send that to a bunch of our licensees and tell them they're out there. Let's make some women's Voltron apparel.
Right. And almost the same group, there are two out of the four, were also at New York Comic Con dressed in completely original handmade costumes of girls dressed as the male pilots. So you had one dressed as Sven, one dressed as Keith, one dressed as Lance, and I think there was one dressed as either Hunk or... Oh, no, the other one was actually Hagar. Yeah, so... And those unique outfits were a hit at New York Comic Con.
Well, they were so cool because they didn't just go with what was in the original show. They did kind of their own unique spin on it, but it was really well done. Like there's a pretty savvy designer among that group because the outfits actually looked, you know, snazzy, almost like a modern take on the traditional pilot outfits. But they all look so cool in them. Unfortunately, I missed them that day because they didn't wear them on the Friday or Saturday. I think they wore them on Sunday, but I saw some really cool pictures and yeah, they did a really great job with that.
Right. Right. So, you know, we really liked having the Voltron fangirls on. Now in episode 19, this was a really big episode for us. Okay. We had World Events Productions president Ted Koppler, and it was also the 10,000 listens contest. And it was exciting because Ted was able to hear these wonderful things that 10 of our winners had said about Voltron and thanking him for Voltron, you know, all those years ago. In this clip, Ted Koppler talks about how exciting it will be for Voltron fans with the plans that DreamWorks has for Voltron, as he also references the similarities between Voltron and Pacific Rim.
Well, what's exciting to me, if I could just digress a little bit, is, you know, there's a new team of players in place right now. And I think the plans for Voltron are very exciting. My son, who went through the Voltron generation, is now heading that effort. He's doing a terrific job. You know, hopefully you're going to be hearing a lot more about Voltron.
Are you referring to DreamWorks?
DreamWorks, yes. And we're going to be actively involved with them as well. So
that sounds terrific. I think everybody's waiting to hear that news.
Yeah. That's going to be very exciting. I look at some of these shows that are on the air now, and it was funny because Bob was, we were watching Pacific Rim, and I looked and I said, my God, that's Voltron. And, you know, the story was very similar, and I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, so your dad gave you a pat on the back there. What do you think about that?
Thank you for playing that, Mark. You lifted my day. You know, I play that back, you know, every morning when I wake up. I'm like, he loves me. that was nice of him to say. It's really been a privilege working at this company. And, you know, I don't take anything for granted. That's for sure. I know that, you know, he saw something in Goline back in the day and was able to create this this franchise that took on a life of its own, really. And, you know, I would really be blessed if I could, you know, do, or if any of us could do something like that, you know, in my life, to find something and to show it to the world and, you know, have it take on a life of its own. And, you know, I do consider myself incredibly lucky to be working at WEP and pushing the Voltron franchise forward. And I'm just, you know, really, really trying to do what's best for the brand and to share it with the world. And hopefully we can do that with a movie and new content and, you know, make it unique and something that we can all be proud of. And believe me, he can be the toughest judge of anyone, my father. but you know, I do appreciate his confidence, and you know, we're doing the best we can here at WEP. So,
well, I think the legacy of Voltron is in good hands, if you ask me.
That's very nice of you to say, Mark. I appreciate that.
No, you're welcome. You earned it.
It's because of fans like you that it's in good shape, though. So.
Well, thank you. All right, well, our next episode was 18, and that had original series associate producer John Teichman. And he was also one of the people that I interviewed for the book. And in this clip, John Teichman tells the story about how MCA Universal was able to get the Voltron license in 1984.
And one day I was up at Premor, and all the hundreds and hundreds of hours in there, stretching mouth flaps and all the stuff we did up there. Basically, it was a pretty tough job. There were a lot of people, not just me, involved, of course, in there. But I spent a lot of hours there, and I got a call because I think Peter was out of town, and I got this call from a guy named Victor Temkin, and it's kind of like the caricature of a movie exec. He goes, "Hi, Johnny, congratulations on your show. You know, it's the ratings are fantastic, through the roof. You know, I want to talk to you about licensing." I said, "What do you mean by that?" He said, "Well, we have licensing all over the world. We do publications, toys. We have a lot of connections through MCA Universal, it was called at the time." They said, "Well, I'd love to talk to you, but I'm really busy right now. I'm up here at Premor Studios." He said, "I'm coming over there." I said, "Well, really, I mean, we're right in the middle of a session. We're under the gun on this stuff, and I really don't know if I can." He said, "I'm coming." So he just walked into the editing booth, and I knew it was business when there were like several of the guys in suits and ties and about seven people in there, each from different ends of the licensing business or different products. And they sat down and started to negotiate. I didn't know what I was doing. I said, "Well, you know, what do we get? We'll take 10% of the gross. I know about the black hole of accounting, you know, in the studio."
Right.
So we'll take 10% of the gross sales. And he goes, "Oh, Johnny, you're killing me, you know." So we ended up with a good deal. I won't say what it was something less than that. But later on, he told me at one of the parties, he said, "You know, you almost blew it there, kid. We almost walked out. That's the best deal we've ever cut in a long time."
All right, so what do you think about that? 10% of the gross, is that a big deal?
10% of gross sounds like a good deal to me. But no, it's a funny story with MCA Universal and how that came to be. I mean, you just you know, with the show, it was the term I've heard used a bunch of times is lightning in a bottle, and nobody at our company had any experience whatsoever with merchandising and didn't even really know what it was. We had roots in broadcasting, and the whole business plan of Voltron was to syndicate it, get it on the air. And I think, you know, that whole business of licensing, it's not that it was, you know, necessarily new at the time, but that wasn't really part of the business plan, I think, for a lot of shows getting on the air. And, you know, that was just kind of one of those lucky things. You know, MCA Universal came along and they, you know, did all the licensing for us. And that whole business was something that our company never could even foresee with the show, because we were in it for the content. And then all of a sudden they realized, oh, my gosh, there's a whole other level here of toys and backpacks and T-shirts and all that other stuff. Which today is such an integral part of the business plan, I think, when you come out with a new franchise. I mean, to the point where You get toy companies oftentimes involved in development of the show. And you also have, you know, toy companies creating their own shows. So it's, you know, the kind of the merchandise and the content really work hand in hand. And I think companies today are way more savvy about that than they were back then.
And I think of a lot of those guys that were involved with the original series, you know, knowing that they were up against other shows that were, you know, based on toy lines and everything, and they had the backing of a big, huge toy company. And the fact that they were able to be just as successful as those other shows, I think really shows just how hard they were working at the time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, you're up against a lot of marketing muscle with some of those shows. And, you know, I think it's in an even bigger way today than ever. I mean, you see them with like Hasbro, they're creating a lot of their own content now. And, you know, they get very involved with development of shows.
Okay. So our next two episodes was episodes 16 and 17. And we had original series director Franklin Kofod. And we got a lot of information from Franklin Kofod over the course of those two episodes. But in this clip, Franklin tells us about some of the voice actors and what it was like to work with them.
When the actors came in, you know, it was the most entertaining part of the whole thing, because, you know, they're always funny. You know, they get down to business. They spend, you know, if they don't have very many lines, they're in there for 20 minutes and they're joking around for 15 of that and do their lines in five and they're gone. And it was just, you know, without that, I probably would have gone crazy without, you know, being able to, you know, get away, you know, 2-3 afternoons a week and go record dialogue for the shows.
Yeah, it must have been really fun working with all those guys. And, you know, I think it's nice to have that comic relief, because it can be a stressful environment when you've got to turn out that many shows. And, you know, I hear time and time again about what a great cast and a great group of guys and the chemistry among all the people in that room. It just must have made it, you know, just a little bit easier to get through those long days. And, you know, wish I could have been a fly on the wall to witness it all, because I'm sure it would have been, it was real entertaining watching these guys work.
Yeah, and I know how he said that, you know, that was the most entertaining part of his week and everything. I can see why. I mean, it's just, you know, it's difficult doing a lot of that editing and all the sound work and all the, you know, he was basically the showrunner. So he also had to print up all the schedules and everything. And, you know, none of that work is really as exciting as sitting there watching an actor just make a character out of nothing.
Right, right. Yeah, it just must have been fun to watch them, for sure.
All right, so we were back going into episode 15, and that was called Ready to Assemble, and that was where Mike French and I were talking about some of the episodes that we were reviewing at the time, and in particular, a very important piece of the whole Voltron puzzle. In this clip, Mike and I discuss the death of Sven in Go Lion and his leaving the team in Voltron.
In Go Lion, this scene is markedly more brutal because, you know, Hagar's cat attacks him. He, you know, falls to his knees, and then he's hit in the back of the head by the Robeast and falls to his knees. And he's bleeding from the top of his head. And then of course the Robeast comes up, to his body while he's laying there on the ground and he can't really move and he's suffering. And the Robeast pulls one of those spiked arms and just stabs him right between the shoulder blades, like just in his back. And that's when he's just like, ugh! You know, and then at that point they quickly retreat, because they feel like they've accomplished their goal. And that's when Keith and Lance come running in and see their friend. And it's a much more intense moment, because there's no question that this guy is about to leave this world. There's no hospital planet or infirmary for him to go to.
Right.
Yeah.
In the regular Voltron, when Keith and Lance get there, it's pretty much too late to do anything to stop Hagar and the Robeast. But Sven is hurt bad. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing they care about.
Right. Right.
And Keith says there's a doctor on planet Ebb that can help.
Right.
All right. Are there no doctors on Eris?
Well, Eris is first of all, in Golion, they play it up as a mortal wound. Like he's been stabbed, you know, through the spine. They don't get specific, but you can see where the Robies kind of, you know, was bringing that spike down on him.
Yeah.
And Eris is aside from the lions, they don't have an immediate way off of Eris. And Eris is like Mad Max at this point. There's no,
yeah.
It's a post-apocalyptic world that's crawling back out of desolation. So there aren't really medical facilities to speak of. I mean, I'm sure they have them at the castle, but the whole idea is that he's bleeding out. Like there's no way to get him anywhere. He's a goner. So.
Well, at this point, Sven is talking and he says, get me there fast. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be able to help you form Voltron.
Right.
And then here's what they show, something that looks like it happened in both episodes. His sword, which was stuck in the ground, falls.
Uh-huh.
Now, to me, that signifies soldier's done. He's fallen.
Right.
You know, you're not getting him back.
Right, exactly.
So that was a pretty important part of the whole story there. You know, in the first five episodes of the whole series, we lose one of our main characters. In Voltron, obviously, it's where he's going to heal himself on Planet Ebb. And in Golion, he's actually died.
Yeah, it's funny. And that's really one of the key differences where you see Voltron depart from Golion in terms of, you know, the mythology and the story. And for obvious reasons, you know, we didn't want to show one of our main characters getting killed. That's a no-no for kids' TV. So, of course, Sven just was sick and was sent to a hospital on Planet Ebb. And then, of course, in the Golion series, you see Sven's twin brother come back, which conveniently for the American version turned out to be Sven. You know, it's just kind of funny how the reactions that you see on the characters' faces, where they're just devastated and crying. You know, they're like, "Oh my God, we just lost one of our comrades," and you're sitting there going, "Oh, he's going to be okay. Why are they so sad?" you know,
yeah.
And he's, you know, in Golion, just kind of, you know, there's references to him as the series goes on, and they, you know, kind of lament the fall of their comrade. But you know, he's good and safe and sound in the US version, and yeah, one of the real key differences between the two series there. So pivotal moment,
yeah,
in both series.
Yeah, and I thought it was important to us include on this best of. So we're going to move down to episode 14. This was Wizard World St. Louis Comic Con recap with Mike French and Jeremy Corey. In this clip, Mike and Jeremy answered a question from a fan at St. Louis Comic-Con about how Voltron was broken up into five lions.
Is there a story behind them being separated into different lions?
We're figuring that out, dude, to be honest. It's tough.
Because yeah, the Japanese mythology is different.
Yes. In the Japanese mythology for Beast King Golion, the idea is that Voltron was this ancient primordial force, and nobody knows what or who created him. And he was destroying all of these galactic demons, and his hubris got the better of him, and he tried to destroy the goddess of the universe herself, and she was like, no.
Fail.
And so she broke him into five parts and forced him to serve mankind for the rest of humanity.
Which is kind of awesome. Yeah. Like, if you like, hey, you're punished, I'm going to turn you into five awesome lions that come together and form Blazing Sword, like... Okay.
Yeah. I mean, right? He loses his sentience. Now, in the Voltron adaptation, the way it works is that Hagar tricks Voltron while he's defending Eris, and Hagar turns herself into a goddess to, you know, lure him in, and then she breaks him into five parts, thinking that will compromise his power, but she underestimates King Alphor and his abilities to bring Voltron back together.
No, but it's true. When you're doing Voltron Force, we were always trying to figure that out. So, yeah. Good question.
Yeah, there's the very beginning of the series, you see this scene where Voltron is this really arrogant warrior type robot, and feels he's indestructible, and it's a sentient being, but with this warrior spirit, and he goes and attacks this sort of deity presence, and gets separated into five lions, and you know, scattered throughout the universe. Basically, this deity being kind of puts him in his place. And it's an interesting kind of glimpse at the origins of Voltron and the warrior spirit that embodies the robot, because, you know, it's when it becomes piloted by humans, you know, it just, there's this kind of, you know, little bit of conflict there, that, you know, this robot who's, you know, there's hints that on, you know, previously at one point in time was hellbent on, you know, just conquering galaxy after galaxy. But in our series, we see him as the defender of the universe. And, you know, it's really about, it's an interesting story about like taming the beast and keeping that warrior spirit in check, and knowing if you're piloting this indestructible robot, you know, the conquering that you could do if you wanted to. But, you know, that's why it's important that a weapon that powerful stays in the hands of reasonable and, you know, good hearted people.
Yeah. And I'm glad that, you know, a fan was able to get that question answered at St. Louis Comic-Con. That's one of those places where you can go and ask those questions on a Voltron panel and actually get a really good answer for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're moving down, and guess where we are, Bob? We're at episodes 13 and 12, which just happened to be your episodes.
Uh-oh.
When we interviewed you, and we pulled out this clip. This is where you tell how DreamWorks has been a great partner in the early stages of your relationship with WEP since acquiring Classic Media.
When DreamWorks acquired Classic Media, they gathered, you know, a good portion of the DreamWorks staff into a room and announced to everybody what this acquisition meant, and sort of went through all of the properties that that now sort of fell under their purview. And they just started listing them, and everyone just, you know, kind of applauding after each property that DreamWorks would now sort of oversee. So, you know, they started going through them, and it was like Casper the Friendly Ghost, All Right, and Rocky and Bullwinkle, Mr. Magoo, Lassie, Where's Waldo, you know, pretty significant brands that everybody's heard of, and a lot of people grew up with. And then they got to Voltron, and the entire room erupted in applause.
Woo! Yay!
Yeah. And I was like, I heard this story and I was just like, oh, that is so awesome. And we couldn't have been more fortunate to have that, that acquisition occur that did, because DreamWorks just, it is a very creatively driven company. It's literally ruled by, you know, a bunch of brilliant creative minds, and they just happen to love Voltron. And we've visited their campus in Glendale a few times now, and have been taken around, and we've met their team from the TV department, the creative development department, both on the feature and television side, their franchising group, their licensing and merchandising folks. And these people just have a real solid appreciation for the property, which just makes me so excited to have partners like them. And we're in some really interesting discussions with them now about where to take the franchise from here. It's really been a thrill to work with some real creative heavyweights who are taking the time to dig into the franchise through market research and just, you know, secondary research of the genre and everything surrounding Voltron and GoLion and everything that was going on at the time that it was made, just understanding everything about what Voltron stands for, just the work that they put in just to get to level zero. Like, okay, what is this and what makes Voltron Voltron? It's been a fascinating process, and I've learned more about our own brand just working with them than I ever thought I could know. And they've been terrific to work with. I think with them, working together with them, there's big things on the horizon for sure. And like I mentioned earlier, it's almost impossible for an independent these days to come out with a property to compete on a global scale. And being in partnership with a company like DreamWorks puts us there. It allows us to compete with with pretty much anyone else on a level playing field. But you know, it's essential these days to have a partner like DreamWorks that you know has the muscle of a major studio behind them, and the way that they've grown beyond just being a movie studio into television content is really fascinating, and it's just mind-boggling how quickly this company is growing other areas of the business. You might have heard the deal that was announced with Netflix, with DreamWorks, producing something like 300 hours of content of an output deal direct to Netflix. It's just staggering, the numbers. Going from basically no television to producing 300 hours of television over something like 3 or 4 years is just, it's just incredible. So they're ramping up in a big way, and they are huge Voltron fans. We're in some exciting discussions, so it's really going to be fun to work with them.
I just want to say that the DreamWorks relationship has started well. Now, is it going in a good direction right now?
It is. It's better than ever. The people we're working with are creative, just brilliant creatively, and they're coming up with some really cool stuff. You know, I the stuff that I've seen so far is just, to me, seems right on the mark for the brand, and it's they're really capturing Voltron in the way that it was meant to be captured, and you know, like I said before, it's a result of them really studying the property and going back to its anime roots and understanding the whole universe. So, you know, they really took the time to dig into the DNA of the property and understand it on every level before attempting to move forward with new content. And I think it will definitely show in the final product.
Cool. We're very much looking forward to everything that we can possibly hear about any DreamWorks, you know, things going on in 2015. Also, I'm kind of looking forward to myself actually having a chance to get to talk to somebody from DreamWorks on the podcast.
Well, we want to get them on there. It'll happen soon.
Okay. All right. The next one down is episode 11 was with Voltron superfan Mark Oliver. And Mark Oliver, of course, he had made his own costume. He has a vast Voltron collection. And in this clip, Mark was asked, at what point did he decide he wanted to collect everything Voltron?
Yeah, I'm getting there. Basically, what I tried to do, like, I've always been a fan of Voltron no matter what. I didn't know anything about the Gladiator Voltron because I obviously never made it overseas, you know, over here by, you know, to the U.S. But basically, what I wanted to do was, you know, collect anything that had Voltron's name on it. I got most of the Lion stuff. And then at the time when I was collecting the Lion stuff, like, nobody really wanted the Gladiator Voltron, or they didn't really want the vehicle Voltron. So I got that for, you know, real cheap on actually on eBay. And then I believe I actually have everything that vehicle Voltron outside, maybe. I don't know, if did they ever make a Gedaiken vehicle set by chance? Would you know?
I've looked at all of the Gedaiken stuff. I haven't seen one. Who knows? Maybe it just hasn't surfaced online before. But I didn't remember seeing it in the Gedaiken line.
Okay. I thought they've listed it on there. I've never seen one either, so I wasn't sure. But yeah, I pretty much have everything in vehicle Voltron. I'm almost there with the Lion Voltron. I got everything from the Trendmasters line. Hopefully, you know, when I get this done, I have everything when it comes to action figures and toys and, you know, DVDs and hats and T-shirts. So I'm trying to get everything, and I'm getting there. Not really, close yet, but I'm getting there.
So Mark is one of the biggest collectors we have, isn't he, Bob?
He is indeed, and we love Mark. Fans like him are really, you know, the folks that have kept Voltron alive for 30 years, and Mark, in addition to being a diehard fan and having all of the merchandise and having really the most kick-ass Voltron collection of probably anybody that I know, myself included, he's helped us out at conventions. He shows up with a homemade Voltron costume, which is awesome. That he told me he spent something like 500 hours putting this thing together, and it shows. It's really carefully created and looks really cool on him. So he'll come and pose for pictures outside of our panel, and he's been a big support of ours, and we really appreciate it.
I want to move down to episodes 10 and 9, where we actually had a long discussion with original series writer Mark Handler. And in this clip, Mark Handler tells us who originally created Go Lion, you know, the Voltron animation.
Do you know who created Voltron?
I've got the name, yeah.
As far as the Japanese name, gosh, I know it at one time. I don't think I know it now.
Saburo Yatsude, also known as Saburo Hatte. I'm not an expert at this, but in Japan, sometimes you have alternate names because you have a kanji that can be pronounced different ways. So I think that's the case here. So it has two different names. So who is Saburo Yatsude? Do you know? I get to play like guessing
quiz. Guys. No, this is great. No, this is great. Tommy Yoon was showing me something. He went on to do a motorcycle show where a guy looks like Keith and the fists are flying out of the robot. I'm trying to remember the exact. We had always heard Nakamura, the name Nakamura.
Well, that might be another guy who was mm-hmm. involved at the beginning. But the actual credit for the creation of Voltron is Saburo Yatsude, a.k.a. Saburo Hatte. He doesn't exist. In other words, of the Japanese shows, that's who it says created him. But in fact, no such person exists. He is a pen name for the producers at Toei. So in other words, the producers at Toei sat down and said, what's our next show? They figured it out. They came up with the concept of Voltron, and then they created this imaginary name as the creator.
Wow.
It's so confusing trying to piece together the actual Japanese people at Toei who were behind the series. Because like you said, there's a lot of pen names, and they don't put actual names on the credits in a lot of cases. So just tracking down and giving proper attribution to some of the creators is like an investigation that you have to conduct. And Mark has really dug in and understands the anime culture. And I think he really took the time to go figure out who were the actual individuals behind it. And he is a wealth of knowledge on anime. If you haven't heard the podcast with Mark Handler, check it out. He's got some really interesting tidbits and anecdotes about how anime is made and the culture. And he's in China now, so he kind of talks about the animation industry in China a little bit too. So really, really fascinating hearing from him.
Yeah, and I have to say, as looking back on all these episodes that we've done for the podcast, that when we first had Mark Handler on, he was the first guy from the original series group that had worked on Voltron, and it really brought something to the podcast that we hadn't had yet, and that was an actual person from the original series. And a lot of people started listening to the podcast a lot more after they found out we might be able to get people from the original series.
Yeah, real treat to hear from those guys. To hear from the guys that were on the front lines of creating that show. They worked really hard on it and just really had no idea what was going to come of this. It was just a kind of a shot in the dark, and it worked out, and all of their hard work really paid off. So it is really, really special hearing from those guys that originally worked on it.
All right, we're moving down to episode 8, and we were talking about the 30th anniversary Voltron book with author Brian Smith. Now, in this episode, we focused primarily on the work he had already done on Viz Media, which was the Voltron Force graphic novels. And in that, we were talking about each of the individual graphic novels. So in this clip, Brian Smith, also known as Smitty, tells us about Hunk's signature sandwich from the Voltron Force. Okay, what are the chunky hunkies?
Go ahead, Lincoln. It's Hunk's famous sandwich that he makes. It's his specialty sandwich.
What's in that sandwich?
Lots of gross stuff.
Yeah, like sardines?
Yeah.
Ugh. And jalapenos?
Not a good mix.
Where did you come up with that combination?
I just, I look at Hunk and I just say, like, you know, this guy probably will eat anything. You know, he's an adventurous, eater. So the fact that he eats something that's like, and he enjoys it, he loves it, that's so repugnant to everybody else, I just thought was funny.
It's a taste bud tantalizing mix of sardines, blue cheese, onions, and jalapenos.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, and that actually, the sandwiches actually play a central role in that whole story.
Yeah.
It was what they were going to plant in Lance's, plant it somewhere in Red Lion and just let it stink up the cockpit, and Lance would never know where it was coming right. from. But also Hunk Jr. ended up loving them, so yeah, it worked out.
Yeah, you know, Brian really grasped the characters so well, and you know, I think a lot of times you have a show and then you have a comic book and there's a different voice. The characters just kind of have a little bit different of individuality. And with Brian, he really just nailed all of the characters. And that, you know, Hunk with his chunky hunky sandwich was just a perfect example. I mean, that's something that would have been that Dragon Up issue. That was actually one of my favorites, and I just, after reading it, said this could be an episode. I mean, we can make an episode out of this without changing very much at all. I mean, that's how much he nailed all of our characters and storylines. So, yeah, maybe down the line we get that season two of Voltron Force off the ground, we'll do an episode, just take his storyline. But yeah, nailed our characters for sure.
All right, so moving down to episode 7, this was the Voltron Devil's Due Publishing Comics author Dan Jolly. Now, Dan Jolly, obviously later on, as we had already talked about, had joined me doing some episode reviews. But the first time that we talked to him was actually a time where on Twitter, some of the fans were, you know, requesting him. And within, you know, less than a week, we were able to get him on the podcast, which was really cool to have that much, you know, response for the fans. So in this clip, Dan Jolly talks about a backstory he'd like to write about if he ever gets the chance to return to do Voltron Comics. When they actually got to Arras finally, and for the first time, they went inside an ancient tomb that hadn't been opened in like 1,200 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they see Green Lion.
Right.
Wow, Hawkins was crazy, but he's right.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if I'm bringing up something that will just open a can of worms or voicing something that other people have already thought about, but I never really addressed how Hawkins came by this information.
Right.
And I think were I ever to get the chance to do anything else with this, that would be one of the things is I would love to do a story just about Hawkins and how he finds out that this mythological thing might be real.
Love to hear it. That'd be a cool backstory to hear. You know, you don't hear too much about Hawkins and the original, you know, discovery of the lions, and that's something that's sort of left to be explored. So, yeah, I would love to see that story.
Yeah, there's been several times during the year where we've talked to fans, and a lot of the fans say, boy, I'd love to hear some of those origin stories. How did they... You know, how did they come to, from the time that the lions were broken up, you know, from Voltron into five lions, to the time that, you know, King Alphor had used Voltron for the first time? You know, there's a lot of there that's unknown.
Yeah, there's a gap in there. And, yeah, we explained a little bit of that in Voltron Force. We went into that with, you know, the planet Ariel and the idea that several different planets kind of came together and contributed to making Voltron what it was, and each planet, you know, embodied a different strength. And so there were some cool kind of storylines that came out of that, but there's still definitely much to be explored about Voltron's backstory.
Yeah, and in episode 6, obviously, we're talking about the first time that we came together as a podcast to do episode reviews. And we called it We're Space Explorers. So in this clip, Mike and I get into the first episode of Voltron, Space Explorers Captured, and you get to hear my Sven impression. Uh-oh. And then this rolls right into Keith telling the origin story of Voltron.
In place on Eris, and they're shocked and appalled.
When they get to the close-ups of what's happening on planet Eris, you got to realize that these guys are way out in space at this point. Okay, so how is it that they can see these close-ups of what's happening on planet Earth? Well, Sven explains it. He says, it looks pretty bad through the telescanners.
That's actually a really good impression. How long have you been working on that?
Oh, you know, Michael Bell would probably hit me.
And according to the legends, Voltron was the most powerful defender of justice in the far universe. He was invincible. Voltron was terrific. He put those evil robots out of business for good. But Zarkon had one last trick up his sleeve. He's got this witch, Hagar, and she disguised herself as a beautiful goddess and went up into space. When Voltron came nearer, she placed a curse on him. But she couldn't destroy him completely. The old witch broke Voltron up into five parts. Each part a robot lion. Discover the secret of the lions, we could bring those five lions out of their hidden dens. They'd all come together and attach somehow, just like the legend says. Two would make the legs, two the arms and body, and one lion would become the robot's head. Then we'd have Voltron, defender of the universe, to help us, and to help the people of Eris fight the evil Zarkon.
All right, so what did you think of my Sven impression?
It was pretty darn good, Mark. I feel like, you could have come in and maybe done a few lines on for Sven. That was pretty dead on. Nice going. And it was a great example of how in the episodes they try to explain things through dialogue that, like, otherwise they're like, hang on, that doesn't make sense. But then they just, you know, have these throwaway lines that just kind of explain why what you're seeing makes sense. It's all logical, believe me.
Right, right. So, you know, We love dipping into the episodes, and the fans who have been listening to the podcast love hearing our comparisons between the original Golion and the Voltron, and they keep on asking for that again and again.
Yeah, it's interesting kind of looking at the differences and similarities.
All right, so going to episode 5 now, we were talking with George Son and Toynami's 30th anniversary collector set. And this was before the collector set had actually come out. So at the time, you know, we were able to get him to actually play the sounds that the bass actually plays when you insert the key. And in this clip, Jeremy asked George what he wanted to accomplish with a Voltron toy his first time working on the brand.
What did you want to bring to the table with a new Voltron toy?
Well, you know, I think in all honesty, when Toei started to create the animations way back in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeremy, but I believe it was originally designed as a toy by Bandai, and then they created this animated series around this Go Lion or Go Beast, you know? And so I think in that sense, there was this product that they thought, hey, would make a great show or a TV series and so forth. Back in the day, a lot of toys were done that way. They created a toy and then they created the animation around that. With us having the animation already created, I didn't focus so much on trying to make, you know, the toy based off the animation. I more or less wanted to go in there and create the lions in a different aesthetic way where they would be more appealing to the eye. I mean, I wanted my problem with the old Godaikin or even the Matchbox Voltron was it was so bulky and clunky. It didn't have that sleek proudness of the cats, you know. And so we went in there trying to engineer a way to still stay true to the classic look of Voltron, but at the same time make the cats look a little bit more sleek and dynamic, And as an end result, I think we've come up with a, I don't know what the terminology is, but it's definitely more dynamic than the old school 80s version. Of course, along the way, we've had different plastics that we could use and different technologies that weren't applied in the 80s. So we utilize as much, you know, technology of modern day manufacturing that we could to create the 20th anniversary.
All right. So George was referencing about how cartoons were made based around toy lines. And this may have been something that happened with the original Go Lion, but we're not really sure, are we?
Yeah, it's an age old question. What came first, you know, the chicken or the egg, the series or the toy? All I say to that is kudos for the creator of this show who saw that robot toy and came up with this entire universe and mythology to go with it. Just brilliant storytelling. And, you know, either way, they're both awesome. So who cares?
And George is one of those people who wants to remain true to the roots of Voltron. And when he came out with the first, the 20th anniversary of Voltron, they redid the mold on that.
Yeah. I mean, George makes some pretty awesome toys, and you know, he puts a lot of care and attention to everything he does, and really has made a real cartoon accurate toy. Because if you go look at that old Matchbox toy, which is, it's an awesome toy, but there's a lot of differences, and it's like a lot more stocky than the version and in the cartoon. But George's version of Voltron is, if you look at him, it looks like he came right out of the show, and he was, you know, careful to make sure of that. And it's just sleeker and a little bit more anatomically correct, I guess you could say. But not to take anything away from the classic. I love that one too, but George's take on it is pretty awesome too. So
I agree. All right, going to episode 4, we are talking about the history of Voltron toys. And when I first talked to Mike about doing this episode, I mean, he was all for it, obviously. I mean, he has a broad history about toys in general, just from the 80s, but also of Voltron toys. And we weren't sure if we could tackle this that early on. I mean, this was only our 4th episode. But, you know, we were pretty ambitious, I think. But we covered it from soup to nuts, you know, chronologically all the way, you know, from 1983 and before up all the way up to the present day. So in this clip, Mike and I talk about the second wave of Panache Place toys that were never made but appeared in that 1986 Panache Place catalog.
I loved the Panache Place. That's what I had growing up, and I know that makes me biased, but the prices are starting to reflect that. It really is a great line.
I think the villains was one of my favorite parts. It was going to be where you had the Galactic Terrorizers, which included Cossack, Merla, Throck, Hazar, Robie's Cyclops, Medusa, Rhino. All those were supposed to be in a new Castle of Doom playset, and I don't think that was ever introduced, was it?
No, it wasn't made, which is so unfortunate, because when you see that catalog from 1986 that shows what Panache is going to do for that year, and you look at the Voltron 2-page spread, it's like, oh, what a lost opportunity, because they were going to go into, like you just said, all of those villains with their own castle playset to go up against the Castle of Lions, much like you had Castle Grayskull and Snake Mountain. You would have had the Castle of Doom and the Castle of Lions, and you would have started seeing the vehicle Voltron characters. They had Jeff, he was going to be part of, I think, the three pilots from the three teams were going to be there.
Jeff was the captain of the air team.
Right.
Cliff was the captain of the land team. Mm-hmm. And Crick was the captain of the sea team.
Right. And I believe in that photograph, what you also see is you see the like a vehicle ship that they were going to make. It was a little larger in scale. It wouldn't have become part of a larger robot. But they made Jeff's fighter that turns into the head of Vehicle Voltron. I don't think it would have turned into the head as that toy, but it would have been like his fighter plane that you could have flown. It was going to be such a cool line.
It would have been nice to get that set, wouldn't it, Bob?
Yeah, I still want mine. The toys that never were. Yeah, they would be awesome.
Yeah, and like I said, when we had talked to Josh McKillips at RetroCon, he had always wanted a Karan and the mice. There would have been the captains of each team on each of the Vehicle Voltron teams. You know, there would have been, you know, more of the villains and maybe even some Robies that we hadn't seen before.
Yeah, you know, it would have been nice to broaden that toy line and have more SKUs. You know, I think, I don't know. I think that nowadays it might even be more doable with, I think the cost of tooling has come down and, you know, so maybe in the next wave of Voltron toys, we can go deeper into the characters and have, you know, more of them made into toys that you can bring home and play with or put in a collector case, as the case may be.
That would be great. There's a lot of Voltron toy fans out there.
Indeed.
All right, so going down to episode 3 now, this was our New Year mailbag. We had opened up the mailbag, basically Jeremy, you know, with his, you know, 10 years of experience at World Events Production and his many years of being a Voltron fan, he was able to answer some of the questions that fans had. So in this clip, Jeremy had been asked the question about, you know, what about the relationship between Lance and Alora, and had that ever been explored? Well, Jeremy imagines what it would be like if Lance and Alora had a relationship instead of Keith and Alora in Voltron Force.
I would think that if maybe he took her out on the right night in Red Lion and, you know, the moon was right and that Eris wine was flowing, maybe something could go down. But I don't think it'd be a long-term relationship. I think, you know, you date Lance, but you marry Keith, right? Is that the... standard line? Is that the bumper sticker I see?
So you're saying it would take a little bit of a Rouge and Ale to get something. Them together?
Something. I'm just saying a little Space Mice quartet going, you know, might. And knowing Lance, I don't put that. And there'd definitely be a rift there with Keith. So there was obviously, being a children's show, there was nothing planned like that. Right. That's just my own. You got to check the box when I start talking that the views are not of Wep and of Jeremy. So that's that. There were plans definitely for Keith and Alora, but we had no plans as far as Voltron Force for Lance and Alora.
So Jeremy envisions what it would have been like for Lance and Alora to be together. What do you think, Bob?
Gotta love Jeremy and his wild thoughts. Yeah, you know, there wasn't, like, everybody kind of presumes that Keith and Alora would have been, you know, the couple to get together. But, you know, the original series didn't explore the romance quite as much. You know, I could definitely see a love triangle potentially developing there and have some friction between Keith and Lance. Who knows? What about Hunk? You know, maybe Hunk gets in on that. I'd love to see Hunk get in a relationship with Alora.
Well,
that'd be an interesting couple.
Yeah, I think they would. And when you hear about this more and more, you kind of get the sense that there's a lot of writers out there that are talking about the Keith and Alora relationship and thinking, you know, we got to keep this relationship tragic. We got to keep, you know, we got to keep them from being able to get with each other all the time, because that's the thing that carries it on and makes people want it even more.
No, exactly. Once you have a happily ever after for Keith and Alora, it's just kind of boring, right? It's got to be the lovelorn.
Yeah.
Know, the perfect couple that kind of never could quite, you know, consummate things.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right, so moving down to episode 2, this was the Robotech Voltron number 1 with Tommy Yoon, and we got to find out, you know, what was coming for that whole series, and what we're looking forward to in 2015 is actually being able to get back with these guys, and I'm hoping to get maybe Tommy and Elmer DeMasso in on this, because we really want to talk about each of the issues in detail. So in this clip, Tommy talks about why Elmer DeMasso was brought into the project based on his previous work.
Yeah, he had actually worked on a Speed Racer manga many years ago, and that brought him to my attention because I had also worked on Speed Racer, and I thought his work was absolutely fantastic. And I had actually been trying to get him on another series to work together. I had been trying to find a project for him for a while so that we could work together. And this was finally it, where everything just fell into place where we could work. And definitely the wait has been worth it. I've been so blown away by how good he is.
Yeah, I'm with Tommy on that. I just love Elmer's stuff, and he was a great pick to do Voltron. And you know, as I've said before, you have some artists that are good at drawing humans and organic things, and others that are good at doing like robots and machines, and Elmer just nails both of them. And you know, I think one of the best artists we've ever had working on Voltron. He really had some beautiful artwork. I mean, you know, his artwork is worth the price alone for those comics. So if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. It's the art just jumps off the page and really fun to read.
Yeah. So maybe if they come together with the episodes 1 through 5, all in one complete, you know, like omnibus, maybe we can bring those guys on the podcast and talk about it.
Yeah. Let's get them. I think that would be great.
Okay. And then going back to episode 1, The Legend of Voltron, this was our very first episode. This was where Jeremy and I did a sort of a recap of New York Comic Con in 2013 when they did a preview of the 30th anniversary stuff that was coming out. So we were doing the same thing. We were going over all the things that were going to be coming out in 2014. And I think we covered it pretty well. In this clip, Jeremy and I talk about our early days of seeing Voltron for the first time.
That's awesome. And I hope we can get some special guests on here, some folks that were integral into the creation of Voltron, and some folks I currently work with, like Bob Koppler and Tiffany Alardi. Maybe they'll hop on and share their unique Voltron experiences. But there's a lot of exciting things going on with Voltron, and we approach the 30th anniversary, Mark. 30 years of Voltron next year. Can you believe it? If you want to make you feel old really quick.
Yes.
30 years of Voltron.
Dude, I was 15 years old coming home from school watching Voltron in the afternoons in Philadelphia.
Yeah? Is that where you'd watch it? Yeah. It was mesmerizing, right? I was in Southern Illinois and just taking this all in. And here was this wild world, this mashup of medieval and fantasy and kick butt robot lions. And what I've always loved, and I've said this before, is that they didn't form Voltron until episode 4. So I mean, you got to see them, but the anticipation, was that a similar experience with you?
Yes, exactly. I mean I knew there was this Voltron robot that they were talking about, and I knew we were going to get to see it, but for the first 4 episodes we were talking about, you know, the characters of the Voltron Force, the space explorers. We were talking about Keith and Pidge and Hunk and Allura and Sven, you know, everybody. And when we finally got to that episode where Voltron formed for the first time, oh my gosh, that was just like orgasmic almost.
Right, right. Geekgasmic. Yeah. And I don't think any show would have the huevos to do that in this day and age. You know, they'd want to push the toy product or something and have, you know, just expose it right away.
Yeah, so we were really anticipating seeing Voltron for the first time when we first saw it. And I couldn't believe it when I first saw him. It was just amazing.
Yeah, the build-up to that was so cool. And, you know, it took 3 episodes to get to that. And it's so hard to do that nowadays because, you know, kids make their decisions in the first 30 seconds of whether they want to stay with a program. And if it's not working immediately, you know, it gets pulled from the air. So there's a lot of pressure nowadays to hook everyone in the first episode. And that was unique about the Voltron series. It took, you know, 4 episodes to really bring everything together, which was really cool. I actually, you know, the new medium that Netflix provides, I think kind of opens up that opportunity again to serialize a show like that. And, you know, be able to tease things out a little bit more rather than having that instant gratification.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was something unique about the show.
Wow. So we went all the way back through the whole year, Bob. What do you think?
Well, Mark, I just want to congratulate you again on a year of the Let's Voltron podcast and, you know, all the work that you've put into this. It's really been a treat to listen to, and you know, all the guests that you've had have been, you know, have just really run the gamut between toys and the original show creators and of course our very own Jeremy Corey. and Tiffany, of course. So really a pleasure to listen to. And if you're a Voltron fan out there, check out these episodes of Let's Voltron, because you will learn everything you ever wanted to know about Voltron. So, Mark, kudos to you. Congratulations. And I look forward to more Let's Voltron podcasts in 2015.
Well, it's been great doing this. And I have to say, people think that, you know, we're running out of material to pull from. There's tons more material to pull from for this podcast. And I just wanted to ask you, Bob, now that we've gone over everything that happened in 2014, is there any way you can tease us for 2015?
2015 is going to be another big year for Voltron, and we are continuing to push forward on development of new content. So, yeah, stay tuned. That's our goal here. We want to give some new stuff to critique and either love or hate. So we hope you love it.
All right. Well, we want to wish everyone out there a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll look forward to doing more of these podcasts and talking to you in 2015 here on
Let's Voltron Podcast.
Let's Voltron!
Let's Voltron!
Let's Voltron!
Let's Voltron!
Let's Voltron!
Let's Voltron! Let's Voltron.